Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Here is Peter Royce.
2 years ago, returning early from a holiday in Tunisia, Meir Arar was detained during a New York stopover on his way home to Canada. Meir Arar was ultimately deported to Syria against his will for almost a year, where he was imprisoned and tortured. Monia Mazig is the spouse of Meir Arar, who fought tirelessly for his release and later for a public inquiry into the actions of the Canadian government. She's joined me on the phone to talk about the case of her husband's imprisonment and torture and of the role of the Canadian and US governments in this abuse of human rights. Good morning, Monia.
Good morning.
I want to dive straight into asking you, what is the case for saying that the United States and Canada are complicit in torture?
Well, this is a very important case. We cannot officially speak about any complicity because there is now a case in the tribunal in the U.S. and there is an inquiry that will be trying to shed some light on what is the role of the Canadian official in that story. But I agree, it is we cannot stop thinking about kind of complicity or kind of contracting other countries to torture what they call suspect.
So maybe you can tell us, what are the actions that happened that led you to this conclusion in the case of your husband?
Yes, the facts are a mystery so far. So, and we hope that with the inquiry we can get more information. What happened is that the American arrested my husband, and then without any process, without any trial, they just decided to send him to Syria. And all the time my husband was saying to them, don't send me to Syria, I would like to go back to Canada. So the question is, what the Canadian official were doing all the time, why they didn't do anything to get him back to Canada. If they think that my husband is a suspect, why they didn't ask for him. So all these questions let us think that there must be some talks behind the doors between the Canadian and the American and about the fate of my husband during that time. And we would like to know all the information about what went wrong during that time.
Now, just a bit earlier, you were using the phrase that contracting other countries. What evidence do you see there?
A terrible what's going on, because the American used this process. They call it extraordinary rendition, and they did that. They did that with my husband. Apparently, they have been doing this before, and I've heard a number of 1,500 other people that have been deported to other countries just to extract what they call information from them. And all these countries are known to the State Department, the U.S. State Department, that they are violent in the prison. They can extract information from prisoners with very, very harsh and violent methods. So the American have been doing this for a long time, and I'm not 100% sure, but I guess my husband was the first one to just be able to get back to Canada or to his country and say and tell his story to the world.
So then you make the case for Canada's involvement in this. Do you get the sense that Canada's just playing along with the United States, or is Canada actually getting others to do the dirty work for the Canadian government?
This is what we are asking. This is a question we have been asking. What is the role of Canada? How Canada, you know, did they encourage the American to send the Canadian citizen abroad to a country to get tortured or not? Did they just kept silent, which is always something to condemn. So what is the role? And it is very serious what's going on, you know, if we condemn other countries about their human rights record. We cannot continue doing this if we cannot do it in our at our home here. So we should be very, very careful about deport when we, it comes to deport people before giving them the right to defend themselves, before giving them the right to a due process. So this is what I have been asking all the time when my husband was being tortured in a prison in Syria. I have been asking for a due process. So it's important that we don't play that role, that game, that dirty game. If we don't play it already, that's fine. But if there are temptation or if there is any indication that we are doing this, it's time to stop it, and it's time for the public opinion to say no to that, because it can put us in trouble. It's our reputation here which is at stake, the reputation of human rights country, and which we are very proud of it.
You won your request for a Canadian government public hearing into the actions that led to your husband's imprisonment. How would you assess the value of the hearing so far?
You know, it's very hard to answer that question. Why? Because obviously it's an ongoing process, and I don't want just, you know, to criticize, or I don't want to interfere with that process, and I want it to be as, you know, as much democratic, as much transparent that it can. However, something like that disturbed me as well as my husband, as many people watching this inquiry, is the fact that there have been some hearing held in closed doors, and my husband's lawyer cannot attend those hearings. Nobody can attend. He cannot attend. So it's closed, and it's the government lawyer can brief the commissioner, and CSIS and RCMP come there and brief the commissioner. So from this point of view, we think that it's not a public hearing anymore. It's closed, and we cannot know what they are telling about, you know, the case. So, and we wish that the commissioner and, you know, everyone who is watching this inquiry to realize that this is a public inquiry, and we want it to be as much, as I said, transparent and as much as fair as possible.
Now, you were also planning to bring some relatives from Tunisia to testify in this hearing. How have those plans been challenged by government actions?
Again, actually, yes, that's true. My brother, who is a Canadian citizen too, but live in Tunisia, who was coming to testify, but when he came back to his work in Tunisia, he was intimidated by the Tunisian government there. So again, we raised that concern with the Canadian official, saying that this is intimidating a witness. Is that possible that the Canadian officials ask the Tunisian government to do that? This is a question we want to know the answer of it. So it's really, really a complicated process. And it's every day it's a new challenge for my husband especially, and for his lawyers and for people helping him, because it is not, I think, his case anymore. It's still his case, but it's the case of many other Canadians. It's our question about the meaning of national security after 9/11. It is the meaning of the rights of minorities, especially, you know, Arab and Muslim after 9/11. So this is a very challenging inquiry, and you know, it is something new. So we would like to work very hard, and which we are doing so far, in order to, of course, first place, to help my husband get back to his normal life, but also to keep Canada a safe and fair country where each one rights are respected.
Yeah, I think it's really important that you raised that issue, that it's of extraordinary significance to us all here in Canada and indeed the United States. What is your sense of the current direction of Canadian policy in terms of, you know, the Canada-US agreements and exposing people to the possibility of torture?
We should be very careful. Canada has been known as a country to accept refugees, to accept immigrants from all over the world. We want to be safe. This is something important. But also, we don't want our own citizen or people that we accepted as immigrant or refugee to just be sent to the U.S. And then if the U.S. government cannot give us guarantees that they are going to act properly and give those people the right to defend themselves, or the right, you know, to be treated in dignity. So the agreement between the U.S. and Canada are very important. It keeps us close together. It keeps us friends, but also it should be those agreements should be done very carefully, and in order to respect our citizens and also our own rules in matters of when it comes to refugees and immigrants. We it's very important that we our Canadian officials do not send people back to the U.S. or refuse them if they know that the U.S. Are contracting other countries for torture. So this is should be, I would see it as something to be considered in the first of highly importance.
Now, the White House has just endorsed a bill to make much of this legal, and the idea of justifiable use of torture seems to be sort of gaining public acceptance. What do you think it will take to reverse this trend, especially with the increasing alignment of the United States and Canada under Paul Martin?
It's terrible. It's horrible for me. I live with my husband now for 10 years. I lived almost 8 years, and then he was deported. He was tortured. I have with me now another man living with me. After he was, tortured, treated in a way that I don't wish other people to be treated like, probably there are other people and thousands of other people who are tortured every day in prisons all over the world, and nothing can justify, in my eyes, torture. It's horrible, it's humiliating, it's putting down a whole human being, and I cannot see a reason to justify torture. What it is very serious, and I can see it even from some famous law professors, especially one in Harvard, I forgot his name, in the U.S., trying to justify torture. I think it's dangerous. And many studies confirm that even the information that has been extracted under torture is not reliable. So why? Why do we just humiliate a person and like put him down? And you know, I cannot find the right words to describe, but eliminate any reason from him to live and to live as a normal being, just to get information. To is it going to make us safer when the U.S. sent my husband to be tortured and to be like in a jail for 1 year? Did they become safer? I wonder. So I don't buy this argument at all. And I'm sure that many people with small conscience can even, you know, very small conscience do not buy that. No, it's very dangerous to think.
Well, I really want to recognize and appreciate your extraordinary courage in taking this issue on, and thank you for talking with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
I've been talking with Monia Mazig. Monia Mazig is the spouse of Meir Arar, who was deported to Syria where he was tortured. For more information on this issue, you can view the Meir Arar website. That's at www.meirarar. That's MAHERARAR.ca.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada.